Blog Talk Radio.
Another Anything Goes. Now, I'm going to bring our guests on in a minute, but I really want to say something. I've got a couple of emails. One gentleman, and we were talking off mic or whatever, that this gentleman says, why are you doing the show again? Why are you doing 90 minutes again? That ship's already sailed. You've done it. I said, well, you know, I enjoy doing it. I feel this is like my Johnny Carson moment. I love the idea of conversation. And in 30 minutes, you can't usually get what we have here. It's a wonderful thing. It's wonderful chance to talk to friends, talk to other people, and just enjoy the vibrance of conversation. I will also tell you, I am totally, I'm trying to find a nice word, ticked off is good, at Comcast. If you have Comcast, change it, because they've been knocking me on, knocking me off the computer, knocking me off the phone, they kept the TV on, though, but they've knocked me off the computer and the phone for the last 2 days, and I'm, like, ready to throw a shoe with them or something, because, yes, Comcast, Xfinity, yes, you guys can sue me if you want, but I have the facts. But they have been driving me totally crazy, and I will say this, I was supposed to do a show yesterday, my regular 30-minute Anything Goes, with Dina Redman and Deb Julien, and I couldn't get on to do the show. And it ticked me off. It really, I'm beside myself. And so I basically wanted to tell you guys, avoid Comcast. I mean, I'd boycott them, but the thing is, I've got a 2-year contract. I can't void them right now. I just hope that they keep me on the air and keep me hopefully interneted. I'm hoping. Keep your fingers crossed. Welcome to Another Anything Goes, and this is a chance that I could talk to friends and family and everything else and enjoy the spirit, the wonderfulness, and everything else. Rachel, I love you. Let me start with Naomi, because I don't talk to her as much. Hello, Naomi. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell them all the wonderful things you do?
Well, I'm Naomi Blackburn. I'm the author of the Author CEO. It is a literary business consulting group, and as well as I am a top Goodreads 1% reviewer. I have a little bit over 3,000 reviews under my belt, and those are the things about me. That's it. So,
when do you have time to sleep, darling? I'm sorry, I've had that too much. Somebody says, you have that many reviews. When do you have time to sleep?
Sleep? I don't even know what sleep is.
Okay.
So, and there are some other projects in the works that I'm really excited about.
Anything you could talk about now, or do you want to wait and hold off?
Yeah, not that I can talk about now, but I can't wait until I can.
Let me introduce this lady, because if I don't introduce this lady correctly, let me start with the author of The Man Code, the author of Broken Pieces. I think it's award-winning Broken Pieces. The Huffington Post columnist, the president and CEO of Bad Redhead Media, the co-host of Let's Talk. Does that give you a swelled head yet, Rachel?
No, it just makes me tired.
Okay. Rachel Thompson.
Thank you very much, dear. I'm happy.
I will tell you something that is totally, to me, funny. And I don't know if Naomi ever heard it. Some person wrote me and says, "Is Rachel your wife?"
That's hilarious.
And what was your response?
I said no, but thank you for the compliment, you know.
Aww.
Well, it was
so
funny.
Sweet.
Somebody else wrote, because I have another show called The Legal Show with Sarah Steele, somebody says, "Is Sarah your wife?" I said, "No." And so if I ever do an event, yeah, I'm going to have both my wives there.
You bet.
You know, wait a minute. Isn't that illegal?
Yeah, well, depending on where you live, I guess.
The base of this network, or the World of Ink network, is in Utah. So, hey, it's not illegal.
Hey.
The studio, of course, is on Blog Talk, but the basis where it's from or the number is a Utah number. So we are in Utah, folks.
Well, I'm just
we're on the
right
net,
out of the park the first time out.
Yeah, so I can bring my wives along, you know, my concubine,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
I have to introduce our special guest tonight. We have a very, very, very special guest. I've known her, I don't want to tell how long because I don't want to tell her how old she is, for years. Yeah, just a very special lady. She's been on my Anything Goes show, hasn't she? And I think, Rachel, you know her very well. Mystery guest, would you like to say who it is?
Hello, everybody, and thank you for having me on, Bennett. This is Jean-Marie Spicuzza.
Oh, hey, baby. How you doing?
Hi, good.
Surprise!
That's awesome.
Now let me start with this lady has did a wonderful post for Rachel's blog. She has a movie working on, and hopefully I'll see the DVD soon, called The Scarapist. I've only been hearing about this, and I'm not making fun of it or anything else. I've only been hearing about it for about a year and a half, and I can't wait to finally see it. I don't care if it's in a DVD or in a showing or whatever. I can't wait. It is. I want to see what's going to happen. I'm totally blown away, and so I can't wait. But, you know, so tell me, when is it coming out? Or when is there a work print yet or what?
Well, it's coming out in 2014, I can say that. So it's coming out this year.
Okay.
Yay.
And who's doing the music?
Well, there are a number of very talented composers working on this project. One is an incredible composer whose name is Chris Barrels, and he completed the music for How I Became an Elephant, executive produced by Georgia Fox and co-directed by my editor, whom I'm very proud of, Cynthia Sharp. Also, my significant other, Guy Hoffman, formerly of Violent Femmes, is composing some of the music.
That's
the
one I wanted to hear. I can't wait to hear him do some music that he does. I can't wait.
And yours truly is also contributing
Ooh.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm waiting for the rough cut DVD print or whatever that I can watch and analyze and give you my notes and just smile and go, yep, and be honest with you, because you know I've always been honest with you, and just tell you the truth. I think I can't wait for the Scarapist. So what on the book front do you have coming up, or poetry front do you have coming up, my dear?
Are you speaking to me, sir?
Yes, I is, because I'm going to get to Rachel in a minute, because I know about her new book, which I'm not writing the forward to, but that's okay. And Naomi, I know she's waiting. I want to talk to her also about things of books and things like that. We'll all get into that discussion in a few minutes. But yes, ma'am, you.
Well, I'm working on a variety of poems, as usual, and I'm also working on a book that is titled The Scarapist.
Oh.
And now it's
where have I heard that title? Duh.
So that's exciting.
Yeah, so there's going to be a full-length book with The Scarapist. Is that going to be an Amazon book or a Nook book, or are you just going to do a regular book that's in the stores, or what?
That's to be announced.
Be announced. I hate when that happens.
I know. Sometimes we have to be so secretive about these things.
Rachel, tell them about your second volume, because I love Broken Pieces. Not because I wrote the foreword, but
thank you.
I do. I love it. I wish I could review it, but you can't when you're involved with the book.
Right.
The second
right.
one, I
right.
will. The second one,
yeah.
I'll get out my fork and knife and put my 4 cents in paper.
I would love that. Although I still may talk to you about writing the second forward, so don't take that off your list yet, dear.
Okay, I'll put it in pencil.
Okay. It's called, at this point, the tentative title that I pretty much think I'm going to stick with is Broken Places, because I'm, you know, sort of inadvertently doing a series. Broken Pieces first, Broken Places next. And then I'm thinking Broken People will be the third one, but I'm not quite there yet. So I'm about halfway through writing it, and I'm working with Jessica Swift. She's been my editor since 2010. I adore her. She's
and
like a sister.
I think she's under the weather tonight, or she,
aww.
Because she's not attending with us, so she might be not available for some reason, and
yeah.
we miss her. Jessica,
yeah.
come soon. We want you to come and talk and play in our playground here.
That's
I love Jessica, but don't tell her that, because I don't want editors to think I love them too much. I don't tell
yeah,
that to Gene Spicer Evans, because if I tell that to Gene Spicer Evans, I get killed. So, you know, I love her too, but I don't want to die. You can't love your editor too much, because if you love your editor too much, they end up trying to kill you later.
Yeah. Jessica's awesome, and I love working with her, because the creative process is so crucial for, you know, for any author. And I think a lot of people think that it stopped with the writing, but it doesn't. I always tell people you need to hire a professional editor, and not, you know, your Aunt Mildred who taught English. Because the process that you create after you've written the words and work with an editor who looks at the entire structure of your book and can help you with, you know, figuring that out, I think I learned more about my own writing and where I want to go with the book once I've been through that process, as opposed to just the writing of it. So I can't tell people enough how important it is to connect with a great editor. But anyway, so the next book goes kind of deeper into the childhood sexual abuse that I experienced. I know in the first book I didn't really gloss over it, but I didn't go into any kind of explicit detail because I didn't want it to be a trigger for other survivors. I don't believe in using that kind of salacious sort of detail anyway, because it's such a difficult subject. So I don't go into specifics about acts or things like that, but I do go deeper into dealing with the shame and humiliation of it,
that I carried for years and years. And, you know, how it, I think I'm even just learning now how that has affected me in various ways. And I'm 50
Not to be rude, I think Bobby Parrish should do the second forward, or at least an afterword on your second book.
Yeah, Bobby's great. She's a survivor, incest survivor.
Either a forward or an afterword from her, I think, would be something wonderful. We have a listener question. Oh, thank you, Danielle. I love you. Thank you. She has a listener question for you, Rachel. Oh, God, this is the fun. Now you can get me on the hot seat tonight. Oh, yeah. Danielle asks, how long did it take you to write Broken Pieces?
It took me about 6 months to write it and then probably another 3 months to edit it. I'm not a super fast writer. I know there are people out there, particularly fiction writers, who can put a book out every 3 months. I'm just not able to do that from like a strictly, practical level. I have two kids that I'm very busy with. One, my older daughter, I have a son and a daughter. He goes to public school. He's 8, and she's 14, almost 15, and does at-home online school. So while I'm not, quote-unquote, homeschooling her, I still have to keep an eye on all of her, you know, assignments and grades and all that stuff. Plus, I own my own business. So, you know, in order to...
You own more than one business, sweetheart, and I know you're doing other radio shows other than ours, so I understand.
Yeah.
You are a busy little bee, and I wish you'd promote the other radio shows that you're doing on our radio show anytime you want. Don't hesitate, you know.
Okay.
Promote it anytime, you know. It's your show, too. Make a long story short, I wanted to tell a Rachel story before I get to Naomi so nobody gets hit. I was at a friend of mine signing at a Barnes & Noble in Rockville. This friend was there talking to readers, and she was a little bored, and she and I were talking. We were just, you know, talking, and she says, "It's slow, Bennett, you know." Da, da. And this person says, "Bennett?" I said, "Yes." "Bennett Pomerantz?" I said, "Yes." Now this is the second time this has happened to me. She says, "Did you write Broken Pieces?" I said, "No, Rachel Thompson wrote Broken Pieces, but you wrote the foreword. Here it is." And she pulls out a paperback, an overstuffed trade paperback or a paperback copy of Rachel's book. I said, "Where'd you get this?" She says, "I special ordered it."
Mm-hmm.
"Oh, well, you buy it and I'll sign it." So if Rachel gets this book from this reader or whatever and wonders how come it's already signed already, she'll know why. I signed over my foreword, I promise. I signed up my foreword, so nobody said, you know, it's you can put wherever you want, Rachel. But I have to say this, though. I was in the hospital last year and a half ago. I had a heart attack. And my cardiologist was saying, "Mr. Pomerantz, everything is fine, everything is well, da-da-da-da-da-da-da." And she says, "Can I ask you a personal question?" I said, "Sure." You know, I mean, this is a person that's looking in my body and knows what makes my heart tick and everything. She says, "Did you write the foreword to Rachel Thompson's book?" And I said, "Yes." She says, "Oh, I know who you are now, Mr. Pomerantz," and left.
I made you famous. How is that even possible? That just blows my mind.
Well,
you just start charging them, Rachel.
I didn't hear what you said.
So you need to start charging them.
Oh, I know. Totally.
Well, let's say it this way. I've enjoyed this, but also there's enough time, I'll tell you, that Rachel should charge me sometimes, but, you know, there are times I enjoy. Somebody said, "How do you have a Huffington Post columnist working with you?" I asked her, "How do you get an attorney working with you?" I asked her, if, say, Naomi and I did a show, how did you get Naomi? I asked her. You know, when I had Elaine Vietz on one of the Anything Goes shows, you know, Elaine's been an Edgar winner and a mystery grandmaster and all the rest of that donkey dust that, that mystery people have. And they said, how did you get Elaine Vietz? I picked up the phone and said, Elaine, would you like to come? She said, sure. No ifs, no ands, no buts. But it, to me, you know, it's not the idea. I don't try to put on airs, and I don't like to put on airs. I mean, I'm very. I'm right now. I'm in a University of Maryland sweatsuit, you know, sitting here talking to you guys and enjoying this. So, you know, somebody's like, "Are you dressed for the occasion?" Oh yeah, I'm dressed. University of Maryland sweats. You know. Oh yeah, baby. You know, I'm wearing my Terrapins pants. You know, get, you know, I'm casual and enjoying this. The radio, what was it, Kathleen Turner once said about doing Jessica Rabbit, she says, you don't have to get dressed up for these things. True, Jean? You've done recordings. True?
I can admit I'm in my underwear.
I didn't hear that. Peas and carrots. I don't want Guy to kill me for saying that. He sees in her underwear. Okay. Okay.
Well, I just wanted to spice up the show, you know?
Hey, it works,
you know,
for
what?
Me. It works for me.
Bennett, you asked. You asked.
That's
you
right.
Asked.
You did.
You asked.
So, Naomi, tell them a little more about Author CEO. I want to give them a little more about what it is and what you do, and because we just had a listener question about 2 minutes ago when I was talking to Rachel about who is this woman. So, who is this woman, Naomi?
Well, the Author CEO is being on Goodreads. One of the things that I noticed, and I have actually, I'm an MBA with about 15 years in business development and marketing, public relations experience. And being on Goodreads, one of the things that I found, first of all, I love indies. Absolutely prefer them over over traditionally published books, just love them. But one of the things with indies is that you're interacting a lot more with your readers than you had with the traditional publisher or with the traditionally published authors ever did. So, you know, they kind of had the buffer of the traditional publishing houses and they didn't have to be out there and things like that. So one of the things that I had noticed with being on Goodreads is that what I was seeing was that the indie authors were fantastic in regards to the creative side of bringing, of developing their book, developing their stories, different things like that. But there was a lot of confusion for navigating the business side of how do you sell your book? You know, how do you get it to market? How do you get it to stand out? How do you get it to be noticed? Things like that. And so I really developed the Author CEO to help authors navigate that process, you know, to develop a business plan, to look at developing a budget, you know, to really look at themselves as entrepreneurs on top of being authors. And I thought in speaking to the authors as I have, you know, that I really had felt that that was missing. And then the other thing, the other aspect to the EO is that I do manuscript evaluation in being, you know, having reviewed, just reviewed over 3,000
Like an editor or like Like what?
Oh, no, you don't want me to edit.
No. When you're saying an evaluation, somebody's going to ask me tomorrow or next day or via Twitter or whatever, what the heck does she mean by evaluation? What are you evaluating? And I'm not trying to be rude when I say that to you.
Yeah, I'm really looking at how in regards to clarity, in regards to character and character development and things like that, how is your book coming off to an everyday reader? You know, a lot of people, they'll have beta readers who will be, you know, it will be their best friend, or it will be a family member. And they can't really step back from what's the good and bad about the book? What is
well,
missing?
Wait a second. I love you, but you lie. My beta reader tells me the truth. My beta reader, Josh, looks at me and says, Pomerantz, you need to slow down. You know, it's like, he has told me words that are not repeatable on air. I'm sorry?
You're very lucky. Hold on to him. Because
No. I'm straight. I'm not.
No. Wait, hold on.
He's got a lovely wife.
Oh, my God. Boom. I walked into that one.
Yeah.
But no. Josh, I think the world of Josh. And Josh, I even mentioned him in my night out call. He says, you didn't have to mention me. Yes, I mentioned you because it was like when I did an article for Night Owl about radio days when I started. He's like, yeah, but you've never told him how you do this thing on air, what's going on. When I did I just did a forward for Lindsay Downs' new Regency. And I love Lindsay very dearly. He's a very good friend, and we're not gay or anything like that. But this listener... wrote me and said, Pomerantz, you've got Lindsay's gender wrong. He's not a he. He's a she. She is a great romance writer. She is, and went on, and she is, and I said, Lindsay, I'm going to read this letter from this, and I'll introduce you after. He says, fine. So I read it. And you can hear him going, snickering in the background. And I said, and what do you think about this, Lindsay Downs? And I put this in the forward, and Lindsay says, it broke me up, you know, because it's totally true. You guys can go to the archive of Anything Goes and listen to the show and hear the first few minutes and know that Lindsay is telling the truth. I mean, he gets it all the time because that's his name, Lindsay Downs. But everybody, it's like somebody named Leslie, you know. Oh, my God, you know.
Right.
Is it a he? Is it a she? Yeah. And, I mean, because he writes in romance and people are saying, well, why don't you write war stories instead? And he's like, why not write romance? So when you say evaluate, are you looking at a name evaluation or how are you trying to evaluate?
You know,
thank
I'm
you, Diana,
here.
For the question. She got me. She even wrote it. Thank you, Diana.
No, I'm going in and I'm looking at, you know, what is the clarity? How concise is your writing? You know, do you sit there and ramble on in your book, you know, to where, you know, it's head desk? You know, how consistent? Are there errors? I have to tell you, I had a situation where I had an author that I was working with that she killed off a family member one way in the book, and then a little bit further down the way, she killed off the same family member in a totally different way. You know, and it was like, wait a minute, can't be. You know, and she was like, you know what, I didn't even catch that. You know, I said, you had him die of cancer here, you had him die of a heart attack over here. You know, and believe it or not, readers pick up on this stuff. I had a situation where there was an author who had contacted me that she had that type of situation. The book had gone to publisher, it had been published and had a number of readers, and a number of readers had picked up on the fact that she had named the same character two different names. nobody else had picked up on that. And she had received a couple of one-star ratings as a result of it. You know, that
wow.
they were like, what's sloppy work, you know, and things like that. So, you know, it's just that type of thing. What are you putting out there? How concisely is your book written? As I said, is it, you know, are you just rambling on? Are you, I've had situations where an author has just rambled on about a scene, and it's like, okay, tighten it. You got to tighten it up. It's rambling, and it's, you know, you're going to lose your readers that way. So those are the big things that I'm looking for when I'm going.
Let me ask you, you're a critic, you're a reviewer for Goodreads, not my favorite place, but that's beside the point. Rachel, you're an author. Jean, you are a poet and an author and a beautiful recording artist and everything else. You guys have faced your critic. What's your worst review?
That's a good question.
Thank you. I have a couple. Not many, but I have a couple.
I released a CD that, in fact, Bennett, you did review and was lost by a mere 3 votes to James Earl Jones Reads the New Testament.
Okay, you're giving me a guilt trip now. Okay, yes, I know.
No,
that was...
I mean, seriously, how can you win against Darth Vader reading the Bible?
He wasn't Darth Vader, he was James Earl Jones. But he was, yeah. But you have to understand what I was, you know, I point scored for the Golden Headsets when I do it, I point score everything. So it's not like somebody can do a 20-minute piece, and somebody, well, even last year I had a wonderful 8-minute piece. Samuel Jackson, I can't say the word on radio, to sleep. It begins with F and ends in K, and there's a, yeah, okay. But Samuel Jackson read this, I think it was 2 years ago, not last year. But it was so funny, it was cute, and, you know, and it's Samuel Jackson, and it was wonderful, and he got it. But, and somebody's like, this is only like 8-10 minutes. And I have another publisher said, well, I have a 6-hour production. What's the difference? I said, points,
okay.
You know.
But I wanted to tell you, you weren't my worst review. You were a great review. No.
Thank you.
The worst review, well, I shouldn't say worst. It was good and bad. A young PhD student in English literature and creative writing named Jennifer Marr, she wrote a review of that same CD. That's my self-titled Jean Spicuzza CD. And in her review, she was very complimentary, and it was really wonderful. But one of the things she said, she commented on one of my poems called Mafia, M-A-F-I-A, as in My Family and I Aren't Mafia, which was originally going to be a history of the Italian mafia from Sicily to the United States, but became a history about my family instead, and how often people, when they hear I'm Sicilian, make that automatic presumption, you know, dare we say a prejudiced presumption about all Sicilians or Sicilian Americans. And one of her statements was, you know, just how can anyone compare the racism or prejudice against Italian Americans to say Black Americans? Go the right thing, and you'll know what I mean. And she offended a huge number of Italian Americans in the process.
I will hopefully don't get bleeped by the network, but one of my favorite poems of yours is Sluts.
Yeah, we can't go down the list. We can't say everything that's in
yes,
there.
Yes, we can't talk it and chocolate, but that's besides the point. I'm not going to go down the whole track list, but yeah, I have a question for you because I wanted to know, and this is from Deborah here. Deborah via Yahoo says, is your self-titled CD still available?
It is. It is available through Inoculation Records, which is my distribution company. It's also available on Amazon.com. Thank you, Deborah.
Hey, I didn't hook her up. She asked the question, so I'll take it. It's always amazing that when you get readership, that there are people that are listening to the show and making comments. Thank you. By the way, thank you, Deborah. Thank you very much. And they're Yahoo messaging me these questions. Rachel's had this experience, haven't you, Rachel? It's like, they're asking questions. It's like, oh, my God. And I cannot, but, you know, I mean, they know, you know, to reach me at Yahoo, at Yahoo Messenger, audioworld@yahoo.com, and I get a message or whatever. I also get people going, get the off the air, you know. And I'm like, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. Naomi, what's the worst review you've written somebody?
Oh, boy. You know, I try to be very diplomatic, we'll just say, in my reviews. I try to put out very clear reasons as to why I did not like a book. Where I thought, you know, what I thought was lacking, what I did like about it, different things like that. So I really try to give critical advice in my book reviews. But I had one, I will not say the author's name because she is a very famous author, so I will not say her name.
Oh, sheesh.
No. However, I had one that the book was just so bad. It was so formulaic. It was horrible that I basically, and this was a consistent pattern within this author's books, that I had basically had it, and I had called her, or I had said that I felt that she was the most overhyped female author in the United States. And yes, I know it was bad. But it was basically, I went into the critical, you know, the critical points of the book of, you know, that I felt it was just formulaic in its writing. I felt that it was shoving an agenda down people's throats, that it was poorly written.
It wasn't Ellen Kushner, was it?
No. No.
Good. We're two for two. Good.
No.
Before I get to Rachel, because I know that I read one of Rachel's lovely bad reviews. She posted it on Facebook, and I could not stop laughing.
Oh, that's hilarious, yeah.
But no, this was a gentleman that was like, your book sounds depressing. I give it two stars, but I don't think I can read it right at this time.
Yeah, I get a lot of those.
I was going to say, she's had a couple of those, because I even laughed at one that, you know, that the woman felt it was too depressing to read, and I was like, well, it's on sexual abuse, you know? Kind of not going
to
be a heavy subject.
I'm like, why are you, okay, if to me, let me say this, because I will tell you my worst review, and the person called me on it, not physically called me, live, in front of me, called on it.
Wow.
I was at Book Expo America. I had wrote the review 4 months before, okay? And it was published. And Madeline L'Engle, A Wrinkle in Time, was recorded by Madeline herself. Now, Madeline has her teeth chatter when she speaks. Now, if she's talking for 5 or 10 minutes, you won't hear it. She was talking for 3.5 hours. And she said to me, she says, what about your review? I said, excuse me, ma'am. And she says, I read your review. I said, thank you. And she said, you said my teeth chatter. I said, yes, ma'am, they do. You can hear it right on the cassette. At that time, there were cassettes, not CDs. Oh, and how do you know this? And I said, I can, and I said, and I, Tim Ditlow was the president of Listening Library. I said, Tim, do you have a cassette recorder and a copy of Wrinkle? And we came to the 10-minute part, and I had her listen to it. And you see the little chatter on there? She says, God, you're right. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. But it was like, when I hear somebody turning a page on doing an audiobook, I can hear, if you're doing it softly, it's usually on, you know, but if you're going, you know, it's like, no, it's like somebody opening the door in Star Trek, you know, no, I don't need that. I'm very critical.
I had one book that I was listening to, and it was for a review. Otherwise, I would have, like, ditched it. Because the man spoke with a lot of saliva, and you could just hear it, like, spitting.
Oh, gosh.
As he was, and I just, I mean, it was like every time I heard it, I cringed. So,
there was an audio production, not a book, called Angels in the Snow. Now, this gentleman was a Vietnam veteran, and I am not prejudiced against Vietnam veterans. It's not a personal thing. It came on one CD, and he talked like this, and he only got louder or lower. He didn't do any vocal shading or anything else. I said, "Who produced it?" He said, "Produced it?" I said, "Yeah." "Who was your sound engineer?" "Sound engineer?"
Oh, God.
And I wrote the review, and I said, if I was myopic, I would say it was a good production. However, I am not myopic. He said to me, he says, "You used myopic twice in the same sentence." And he took the review, this is years ago, this is about 16 years ago. He took the review and put it in Publishers Weekly with my picture, my review, every word, word by word, with the caption in big, bold letters, "Prove this critic wrong."
Oh, geez.
And below had the address where they could pick up the CD. And I got a lot of email, a lot of people writing me going, "You were right, you were right, you were right." But the guy made money on the CD because he tried to prove me wrong. And I'm like, I'm not saying I'm not fallible. I am fallible. But I was like, to me it was funny as heck. So, Rachel, how many of these people do you have coming out of the woodwork? It seems like you have a couple of them.
You know, as we were talking about it, I decided to go over and look. I have 183 reviews of Broken Pieces, and of those, 14 are one star. And 105 are five star, and then there's a little bit of each in between. It's interesting because when the book first came out, there were more comments on the negative reviews. You know, they're all, to me, I don't get offended by them. I figure if somebody felt something, then and they wrote a review and they hated it, then great. At least I made them feel something. And I think some of these are kind of silly. Like one gal said, "I could not even get past the first few pages. I'm used to murder and suspense, and this is not that."
Was this after my foreword or your words?
Yeah, I know. It's nonfiction and poetry, so I don't know what she was expecting, but that's okay. You know, it wasn't her taste. I think a lot of authors have a hard time with these types of reviews because they feel it's not fair. And the thing is that, life isn't fair, and this is what we have to work with. And people can leave reviews that make absolutely no sense. But that's okay. That's what it is. There's really nothing you can do about it except just keep writing and not get too embroiled in that sort of negativity. Some of these, I think this was addressing what you talked about, Naomi, where, like this gal said, "I read to be informed, to learn something new, or to be entertained. This book didn't fall into any of those categories. Having never experienced any of the tragedies written about in this book, I think it was just a major downer." I didn't even finish it, but I'm giving it 1 star. So those kinds of things, you kind of go, well, you know, whatever, it wasn't for her. I mean, I think that reviews like this are excellent demographic data, great market research. It's a really good way for you to find out who your audience is not. So for future books, you'll get a little bit of a better idea of how to market your book. You know, maybe I didn't make it clear enough that, you know, it talks, I mean, that it talks about serious topics. Maybe people just don't pay attention to that. Maybe they downloaded it free. I mean, there's so many factors that go into it. And I just read it was like Psychology Today or something that had this report out about why people write negative reviews. And some people write.
I want to hear this one right a second. I'm getting my popcorn and ready. Go ahead.
Okay. So the study said there are really two reasons. The first one is that some people just like to be the bad guy. Even if they love the book, they feel that their review will get more attention if they take the devil's advocate point of view. So I don't know how truthful they're being. I don't know if there's any way to really test that. But some people will just say, okay, this book has, you know, a majority of 5-star reviews, so I'm going to give it a 1-star to bring that author down a notch. And they find satisfaction through that. It's, you know, it's a psychological thing. And then the second one was something to do with, I forget what it was, like some people will never give a 5-star review, but the highest they'll ever give is a 3-star. So it was something about a person's own, you know, rating system. And for them, the best possible review they could ever give to, you know, I don't know.
Wait a second. I'm partially guilty of that. Partially guilty. I go 1, 3, 4, 5. I skip two.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I skip two. But I give more 4 and 3 and 4s than 5s. You are right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guilty. I'm sorry. I don't. Should I put my blindfold and last cigarette on and that way you guys can shoot me or what?
No, not at all. You know, I honestly feel grateful if somebody decides to review my book, even if it's a 1 or a 2-star. I don't take it personally. I don't get upset about it. I figured, you know, a lot of people reacted to the structure of the book, and this was something that Jessica and I kind of went round and round about. And she said, you know, it's called Broken Pieces, so let's not put them all in chronological order. Let's not put all the essays together and all
which
the
is something
together.
I liked about it. It worked.
Thank you. Right. Thank you. But a lot of people had a really hard time with that because they're used to kind of, not to be offensive, but we're used to being spoon-fed, you know, chronologically ordered books or a sense of organization. It's just the way that our brains work.
Felt it almost in a way like Rashomon, where present, past, present, past, past, present.
Right.
And to me, it worked better that way. It wasn't just, oh, yes, give me today.
The one thing that Jessica said, sorry to cut you off, and this was really my main goal, is if somebody gives me a 1-star and says, I was uncomfortable with the structure of the book, to me that's like a 5-star because that's exactly what we were going for. And the fact that they were frustrated or upset, they understood then from a visceral perspective what I felt going through those types of experiences. So, you know, 1-star where they say they're frustrated with the structure makes me just kind of go, woo, and do a happy dance because I'm not crazy. But that's what we were going for. So I kind of actually loved that whole sort of feedback that I got. It confused people. And I liked that. You know, it kind of put them off guard.
I think that's what scares me when somebody says, you wrote the foreword. They're like, oh, my God, you read the book. So, yeah, okay, I'm happy. I'm a happy camper. I'm so
thank you very, very much.
But I called it the way I saw it, and I'm not trying to toot my horn, but I think I called it the way I saw it. I compared you to Jerry Lewis, I know. But You know, because your first two books were very comedic, were very humorous. I enjoyed them.
Okay.
And that's why
Thank
Broken
you.
Pieces was a total diversion from that. And
yeah.
a total diversion, and it worked. I had just, at that time, I had written the foreword to Silent Angel from Melanie Ravert, and it was different from her books, too, because Silent Angel is about her daughter, Stephanie, who has autism. And usually she would be doing action-adventure, so it was totally different. And I felt the same way about your book. And you have to compare it to it's like somebody doing, like George Clooney doing Batman and then suddenly doing the one he won his Oscar for about being a prisoner that was tortured. It's same thing with you. Jerry Lewis did The Day the Clown Died. Nobody wanted to see it because it was anti-Jerry, if you know what I'm saying. And that's the same thing with Broken Pieces. It was, dare I say, anti-Rachel. It was different Rachel than what you expected.
It definitely was a different direction. But one, I just felt like, I almost feel like in some ways, and maybe Jean, you can speak to this. Like, in some ways, the book sort of wrote itself. Like, it was all those stories and poems were just sort of in there. And it's like my brain just sort of had to catch up.
Yeah, I get that. I definitely understand that. It's interesting how sometimes you think the hardest subject is what just comes pouring out. The Scarapist actually didn't come from me because I was going through it at the time. That a very close friend of mine, Michael Slobotsky, who studied at CalArts with Steven Soderbergh, he said you've got to write this. You've got to do a screenplay. He said, I'm a great writer, and I could probably come up with something like this in 40 years, but this really happened. You've got to write this. And it was the quickest script I'd ever written. It took me 28 days to have a first draft. That has never happened before.
How long did it take for the second draft? I'm not being funny when I say that.
The second draft probably took 2 weeks, and by the, I don't know, by the 13th draft, it was probably a couple of years. It just kept, it just was like the rabbit hole that leads to more, and I think it's exciting that you're going to be doing another one, Rachel, and another one after that. I've already got my mind on. You know, I've already got my mind on, you know, Scarapister and Scarapistist. And
I'm not picking on Eugene, but I want you to tell him about your book that I keep wanting to see, and you wanted to make it into a movie, and I wanted it so badly. And not the one you were offering
angels?
Me a part in it.
Are you talking about Making Angels?
Yes, I'm talking about Making Angels.
That was a screenplay first. That was actually, I dreamt the characters, I dreamt angles of the camera, I dreamt settings and locations and sat down and wrote the script and then wrote the novel to that. So that was a screenplay first.
So I cannot wait until the Scarapist is successful, then you're going to do Making Angels.
Yeah, then Breath of God.
Okay, tell them more about Breath of God. I know what Breath of God is. Tell the listenership what Breath of God is.
Well, Breath of God started, it all started when I was a young philosophy student and working part-time at a classical music store. And the manager, who along with his wife was this wonderful feminist who used to march in all kinds of feminist rallies, handed me this disc that we got, a promotional disc, and said, you'd be interested in this, Jean. This is a classical, this is a woman composer from the 12th century. And I was like, whoa, wow. And then I wasn't prepared. I sat down and I listened to the very first piece called O Quam Mirabilis Est, and it was a single woman's voice for like 2 minutes and 46 seconds, and I thought I was going to float right out of my body. I'd just hang on to furniture. And then I read the liner notes she's an herbalist, she's a philosopher, she's a social critic, she's an illustrator, she's a theologian, she's a writer, she's a...
Wait a second,
incredible.
Isn't this you?
That's what I thought. I was like, wow, like me, that's so cool. Her life
her life was like a realization of how much was possible. And the fact that she did it in the 12th century just blows your mind. She's actually the first composer whose biography we have any record of at all. She's the first person to catalog the female orgasm. She's the first person to have cataloged the common remedies of Western Europe, which is why we've got a record of them. She was the first person to recognize the multiple functions of the liver and the role that it plays in health and overall just life force. And it just goes on and on. She's so remarkable, and yet I had not heard of her in my studies. I heard of her through the music and this group called Sequentia. So more and more, rather than being a philosophy professor, I just felt like I had to make a movie about this woman because she just was with me constantly. And so that really was what brought me into the courage to be a writer publicly and also to pursue motion picture.
And hopefully Breath of God will be out, hopefully in 2-3 years, and I'll go, yeah, I'm going. let me take a momentary break. This is the World of Ink Network, but we're going to talk about the Ben Pomerantz Network for a minute. On Monday, the 19th, on The Legal Show, attorney Sarah Steele and myself will be talking the Quentin Tarantino Gawker case in our Lies, The Hollywood Truth, and The Whole Truth. And that will be on the 19th at 6:30 p.m. Rachel, who are we having as a guest on the 21st? Is that Catherine Asaro, I think?
I'm not sure. I think I booked the 28th. So
we're having Catherine Asaro on the 21st, and she's going to talk about her Kickstart program that she's got for her new book. And on Friday, and that will be at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. And on Anything Goes on Friday, the normal 30-minute show, I'm going to have the final trifecta. I've had Dakota Cassidy last November. I had Robin Peterman about last month. And now I have the trifecta. There are three authors. Renee George is the last of the three. And Renee George, they write romantic paranormal, and it'll be an amazing, amazing time just to have Renee on there. And we may get a surprise mystery guest if she can get off her duff and give a call in at a right time. If she can't, then I will cry a lot, but I'm hoping, yeah, there'll be a surprise for her. Yeah, I love surprising people. I hate them, but I love doing it to other people. Unless it's gifts, then yeah, I'll take any I can get my hands on. I have to say this. Many years ago when E.T. was on VHS, a friend of mine said, Bennett wants E.T. for a gift, and I got 21 copies of E.T.
Wow.
So, yeah, on VHS. Now, it gets depressing. So I have to regulate what people send me. Make sure you get this one. That's why I have an Amazon wish list. But that is our shows coming up. And we are going to have a lot of fun coming up. And I will tell you this much. We will be taking a break the first 2 weeks in June. Rachel's taking a vacation from me. Mm-hmm. She's going to Hawaii and leaving me alone. So I'm going. I did a very smart and nasty thing because I'm nothing without Rachel on Let's Talk.
Aww.
And so I'm letting Rachel go to Hawaii, and I'm going to close down the shop for 2 weeks, and I'm going to cry and miss her and everything else. Hopefully,
aww,
she'll send me a postcard and email.
I will.
And I am saying, wish you were here. I had a friend
Bennett,
who went to.
That's when you say, pack me in your suitcase. not wish you were here packing in my your suitcase.
My friend Danny, and that's a guy, not a girl, went to Paris with his girlfriend, now it's his wife, and had a picture of the Eiffel Tower and put a big X. And I said, I was here. Too bad you weren't. Send me the post. I thought, I love you too, you son of a... But, he and I, I've been to places too. I've sent him postcards and wish you were here, you know, like the big, they had a big Paul Bunyan, and I stood above it, you know, stood it, and there's Paul Bunyan, you know, little Bennett, big Paul Bunyan. Wish you were here. He's like, yeah, why?
That's awesome.
Well, the 28th, we have Karen Kondazian, who is our author and actress guest. She's the author of The Whip, which is not a BDSM novel. It's actually Western fiction.
Darn. I thought she was going to... I thought it was a BDSM novel. I had my whips and chains and milk.
No, not at all. She's very good about it, though. She's a veteran actress, has been in the L.A. scene for years and years, and many of Tennessee Williams' plays at the Circle L.A. Circle Theater, I think it's called, won tons of awards. Actually met him several times. They became good friends. And she wrote this novel, and it's based on the life of Charlie Parkhurst, who was a woman who dressed as a man and became the first female stagecoach driver for Wells Fargo.
Hmm.
Wow. So it's an excellent, excellent book. She's actually been writing the screenplay. I've interviewed her before. She's extremely nice, and she just has such wonderful stories. I mean, my goodness, she's been acting since she was 8 years old. She was chosen to be on that, what's that, Art Linkletter show?
Kids Say the Darndest Thing, or House Party,
yes,
which one?
Yes, that's when she started, the Kids Say the Darndest Things. And she was chosen to do that, and she did that, and that started her career. And I think she was maybe 8 at the time. So she literally has been acting for over 60 years and writing most of that time as well. So fascinating lady. I can't wait to talk to her.
Well, yeah, I was on Bozo with Willard Scott when I was 10.
Were you? Wow.
Yeah, it was with Willard Scott, no less. Willard Scott was Bozo. Oh, my God. Yeah, okay.
I had no idea.
Yeah, he was Bozo he was Ronald McDonald, before he did the weather on the Today Show. So, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm dating myself.
The many lives of Senate Pomeroy.
Yes, no kidding.
Yeah, but those things. Have you ever had one of those memories or met somebody that it's like in, you know, when you were a child or whatever, that had that kind of, not influence, but memory that you can remember? Anybody?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't think I understood the question.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, say it again, dear. What are you talking about, boy?
I met Willard Scott when I was like 10. And so, I mean, the memory, though, it still lasts. I still remember the set. I remember the smells. I remember the lights. I remember the everything. And so was there somebody that you had met that you just remember, other than me, of course?
Yes. Well, I have to say, when I lived in New York City for about 3-4 years, and my husband and I used to go have dinners often as we could afford it at a place called Shenley West, which was great sort of high-end Chinese food, but wonderful people watching over on the west side. And one day we were coming out as someone else was coming in. It was very, very, very cold, windy, icy. You know, we were all bundled up. And this very large man says, well, let me get that door for you, darling. And I look up, and it's John Goodman. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was like, a little bit of starstruck, and he was just very sweet, like it probably happens to him all the time. And I'm like, oh wow, it's you. And he's like, last time I checked, you know, he was very funny about it, and very gentlemanly, and really big. I mean, I don't think people realize what a big. I don't mean like, you know, fat or rotund, just very tall, very big guy, and just couldn't have been nicer. So it was interesting to sort of put those two together. I enjoyed that.
I have a really great story for you guys about this. That is, I love that story, Rachel. You triggered a memory for me of when I went to Davy Jones's book signing when he put out They Made a Monkey Out of Me, his autobiography.
Oh my gosh.
About being in the monkeys. Yes, and I was in Milwaukee at it was either Mayfair Mall. I think it was Mayfair Mall, and everybody was crowding in there, and there were these two young boys, very young, standing nearby me in line, and people kept pushing in front of them, and one of them looked like he was going to cry, the younger one, and the older one said, people keep shoving us out of line and skipping us, and we can't get up to the front, and I was so upset about that, so, you know, they were kind of taking advantage of these were mm-hmm. younger children, and they kept, so I stepped out of line thinking, well, I may be losing my chance to meet Davy Jones, but this is just so mm-hmm. wrong mm-hmm. that we walked up towards the front of the line and said, you know, these kids have been waiting, and they got skipped, and it just isn't right, and they said, well, he's not going to be signing anymore, but you know what, mm-hmm. you did that, and it was so nice, we're going to take you up there. So they took us all up to meet Davy Jones and signed our books. And that was the first time in my life I almost fainted. I almost fainted when I met Davy Jones. So that was, I did a good deed and it turned out well.
Isn't that nice? That's a great story. I love that.
Thank you.
Naomi, how about you? Anybody?
No, I'm boring.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. I was nice.
I haven't met anyone.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll come. No. What I always find interesting was I got to introduce Ray Bradbury. Now, this is my favorite story in the world. Because Ray Bradbury taught me the greatest lesson in the world. I'm the biggest Ray Bradbury fan, and I still am the biggest Ray Bradbury fan in the world. And Ray taught me the best lesson in the world. My friend said, would I introduce him at University of Maryland? And I said, sure. And I'm backstage in the backstage area. And I said, Mr. Bradbury, sir, he looks at me and says, call me Ray. Yes, sir. And he says, no. He puts his hand on my mouth and says, Ray. And I'm like, Ray. Okay, yeah, very good. And so I walk in and he says, I heard you gave the Golden Headsets first are nominated, I vote on them and point score them. And he says, I heard my publisher said I was nominated for a Golden Headset this year for Green Child's White Whale. I said, well, sir, next month you'll win it. And he says, that's amazing. Thank you. I mean, there's no physical award. It's just in my column. But it was like, that's amazing. It was like so nice of him. And I had brought some books, and I didn't think to have him autograph it then. And I introduced him, and I sat down, and he gave the liturgy of my life about my audio world career and my other thing. I'm like, this man knows who I am.
Wow.
I was totally in shock. Well, a couple of months later, I'm at Book Expo America, which was at that time called the American Booksellers Association Convention. And I'm in line with my ticket to see Ray to get him to autograph a few books I had, the books I was supposed to have autographed before. And I'm hearing, I had my headsets on, listening to an audio book, and I hear Bennett and this guy behind me. He says, Bradbury's calling you. I said,
oh my God.
What are you talking about? And guy in front says, Bradbury's calling you. Security guard says, what are you doing? And Ray says, oh, he's with me.
Oh, wow.
He says, Bennett, would you like to sit down and join me?
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I'm like, oh, my God. Ray, and I did get it right. I did get it right. And I pulled out my bag, opened it up. He autographed my books, put them away. He autographed the new one, put it away. And I'm sitting there opening the book. He's looking, talking for a second to people who have tickets to have him autograph. He signs the autograph, everything else. His publisher, for one of his audio publishers, comes up and says, Bennett, you know Ray, and we're sitting next to each other. Our legs are almost touching. And Ray puts his fingers together and he says, yes, we're this close. And technically, we're putting, that's how close we are, because it's just a very, it's like you have six authors on a table. And so it's like Ray is, it was just as wonderful. And he and I had a drink afterwards at McCormick Place. And he was drinking milk, and I was drinking a Perrier. He says, the bartender or whatever the guy was says, you enjoy your time with your grandfather. So I always remember, and Ray taught me the greatest lesson in the world. He said, don't be nervous as anybody. I put my pants on one leg at a time like you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remembered that. So when somebody says, I'm such and such. Yes, sir. Great to know you, et cetera, et cetera. Because I remember, as Ray Bradbury said, they put their pants on one leg at a time like you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
A lovely man.
Wow.
Lovely.
That's amazing. That's about as starstruck as I've been since Davy Jones, Ray Bradbury. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow.
I love his work. Oh, my God. I wish they make a movie.
I was thinking, they've been talking about doing Fahrenheit 451 and doing a remake, and I just think that would be great, but I don't know, don't mess with the classic either,
I would not like to see what they're going to do to Fahrenheit 451. The film, yes, the film is a little dated and a little much the way they did it. But, and it was interesting what they did, because Bradbury was in charge of the script. I just would love them. My favorite of Bradbury's stuff is Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. And it was done by Disney, and they kept the Bradbury book intact. And it was done by Disney.
I remember that.
Jason Robards and Pam Grier and Jonathan Pryce. Oh, God. It was like Jonathan Pryce is Mr. Dark, even though I would have, as Bradbury said, he would have liked to have had a younger Christopher Lee do it.
Mm.
Oh, I could have seen Christopher Lee do it. And prickles up and down my spine. Jonathan Pryce did good, but still, Christopher Lee. Okay. So let me update everybody on how they can get a hold of you. Other than sending smoke signals, and Tano, of course, is readily available to send smoke signals. Let me start with Naomi. How can they get a hold of you and author CEO and nice things like that?
Well, my author CEO site is authorceo.com, and we have I will write posts on how to navigate the business side of writing and bringing your book to market, and we have authors who come on and guest post. Rachel has done plenty of guest posts for us. And I can also be reached on Twitter nblackburn01. And then I can be found, or the author's CEO can be found at, on Facebook at the author's CEO. So, and we do a lot of posts there too.
Rachel, other than they listen to you on Let's Talk, because I know they do that, how will they get a hold of you? And they should, if you haven't bought your copy of Broken Pieces and The Man Code and Walk in the Snark, you need to buy them. It's not a trilogy, but you need to buy them. See, I'm a better shill than you are, dear.
Yes, I have three books out. They're all available on Amazon in ebook format. And if you want a print version of Broken Pieces, you can now purchase that. I was signed by BookTrope last year, and they will be producing my next two books as well. One is going to be Social Media for Authors, titled Let's Deconstruct, because I'm always saying that in my posts. And then the next one after that will be Broken Places, and then eventually Broken People. So Amazon is where it's at for me, or the paperback's pretty much available everywhere, anywhere that you go, which is great. You can find me at Rachel in the OC on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, Pinterest, rachelintheoc.com. And then if you're interested in Bad Redhead Media, finding out tips for marketing your books, go to badredheadmedia.com or Twitter or Facebook or Google+ or any of those. It's pretty consistent across the board. And
other than Let's Talk, what's the other radio show you're doing, or what's your next one you're doing with the other radio show you're doing?
Yeah, I'm with a group called Bestselling Reads, and the premise of the group is that you have to be a number one bestseller on a list somewhere, but it has to be a paid list. So it can't be, you know, that you were free and you got to number one on free, because it's not that difficult to do. So all of the authors, we pay to be part of this group. We have a radio show. We do giveaways. It's a very organized group of about 30 authors. If you have a number one book and you'd like to be a part of the group, certainly give me a holler. We do have a process that you have to go through to be approved, and everybody helps. I do the radio show. I help with the social media. Some people are putting together the blog posts or maintaining the website. So, you know, it's a wonderful way for us to have our own little small community to promote each other and help each other and give each other ideas. So I'm really glad.
And they haven't even asked me on yet. I'm waiting. Okay, you're kidding. And I'm sorry?
Oh, no. And then I also, of course, right now am writing for Huffington Post book section. Pretty much, you know, they wanted me to write about books and marketing for authors, which is what I do anyway on my own site. So it's not too much of a stretch, but it's all original material that goes to them. And I post probably once or twice a month over there.
You post at least twice a month, and believe me, people have said to me, they said, how lucky are you, because I have you on the show. It's like, yeah, okay.
That's so nice.
And I enjoy that they think that I'm such a, you know, a macha, because I got you on the show, and it's, you know, big deal. You
just
have
me.
A huffing.
It's just Rachel.
I'm so happy.
No,
you know, I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Jean, tell them the truth. How do they get a hold of you? Tell them about the CD and everything else.
Well, if you think really hard and click your heels together three times, there's no place like Jean Marie. No. Okay, so you can go on Google. You can Google my name. You can find me on Amazon. You can find me on imdb.com. You can find me at seasonsandamuse.com. And on Twitter, and I'm linked to Rachel's awesome Twitter links, and there's all kinds of things. I'm looking forward to finding out more about Naomi now that I've met her through this program. And so basically,
you're not going to look me up again? Sheesh, I'm upset.
Bennett, I am so blessed. You're like my big brother. I get to call you whenever I want. That's so cool.
Yeah, well, I haven't heard from you in a coon's age, so we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about it when we get off on Facebook. I'll give you a guilt trip. I'll also give you a number. I'll give you the new number, but that's beside the point. I'm not giving it on air. Are you kidding? This thing is archived.
No.
I'll be calling. I'll get calls from... Okay, but tell them, give me a little hint here. They get your CD through Amazon, am I correct?
Yes,
that is correct. And the Scarapus will be released, book and film should be released by what, the end of the year, say? I'm not getting a time and yelling and screaming, but about the end of the year?
Before I pass on, yes. Before the end of the year.
Now,
yes.
Is there anybody I should know that in the Scarapist, anybody almost semi-famous maybe that's on this panel?
Well, I think what's exciting is since we shot the Scarapist, our actress portraying Ilsa, i.e. the Scarapist, her name is Katie Colleton. She's a very, very talented comedian.
Yes, she is.
And actress. And she actually, a web series that she created with her group that Katie did, they're five women comedians. I think there's five of them. They're all women, and all of their names are some version of Katie. So they created a web series called Teachers, and it's just been picked up for pilot on TV Land. So let me say this much.
Hopefully she will come when the Scarapist is out on either out in the theaters or on DVD. She and you and maybe somebody else from the cast can come and just have a good time on another Anything Goes, or even the classic 30-minute Anything Goes. So, you know.
I would be honored.
I know. You can come anytime. You know, all of you are welcome to visit anytime you want, except Naomi, when we have a pain in the tushy that annoys you, you know, just tell them, yeah, let's do it on Bennett's show. They'll back off quick. You know that.
Oh, no, it's fun, Bennett.
He's a critic.
He loves that. That's right.
When I have fun.
Yeah. Oh, I enjoy Naomi and this gentleman, and I don't want to even give names, but this gentleman were fighting on Facebook. I said, well, when do you guys want to do my show?
I still feel guilty about doing that. No.
Well, you know, it's like the old expression, put up or shut up. And, you know, somebody on Facebook can be really big and I'm big, I'm playing. They can hide behind their computer, but when you tell them, hi, would you like to do it on radio, suddenly it's like, I'm busy. Do you tape? Whatever. They find any excuse they can. That's why I'm like, you know, that's why it's like, Naomi, come on. It's like, yeah, come on. When would you guys like to do it? And it's like,
No, I felt, in fact, I still talk about that because I actually felt very guilty about that. Because it's one thing if I do it on my Facebook page, but when somebody attacks me on another person's and I go back at them, it was like,
darling, my wall is your wall. My wall is you. If somebody attacks, go for it. I don't mind. I don't enjoy a fight, but you know.
Yeah, but.
Do
your
it.
Your friends didn't enjoy it, Bennett. Your friends leave
I have friends going, this was good. Why isn't there more? Why didn't they do your show, you know?
Yeah, well, I felt like I was very disrespectful to you.
Darling, I will say this on air and say this to you personally. You're never disrespectful to me. I mean,
I take that very seriously.
So do I. I'm saying none of you ladies are ever disrespectful. You guys are extended family. You guys are good. I don't have a problem with anything you guys say, kid, or anything else. I love you all. You guys are good. You are never disrespectful to me at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, I never want to do that, and I never even wanted there to be a hint of that. So, you know, it was like at that point, it was like, ah, dude, I'm so over you. You know, it's like I'm ready to move on to something else. I'm ready to go to Rachel.
But you see, that's why I offered him the chance to do it on radio, because you know they're not. He wouldn't have done it. He would have done. Yeah, he would have said, "I can't do it." You know, I
Yeah, he would have done it.
That's why, you know, when somebody challenges me, "You sure you want to do it on radio?" No. They're not. They're scared of, because they know the show's archived. Yeah, Facebook. In a day or two, it's gone, or even, you know, whatever.
I thought it was still funny, because I will still tell you that that is who attacked me on Facebook or on Amazon. I will say it until I come clean. Let's not name names.
I don't want to end up in loss.
I don't want to have Sarah Steele
defend me. I love Sarah. She does the legal show, but I don't want to end up with her as my attorney. She is my attorney, but she can represent you. Yeah, I don't want her to represent me other than on the legal show right now.
No names.
No, I admit her name is Sarah Steele. She is an attorney. No other people's names. So, Jean, so what other than the Scarapus, which is coming out, what else do you have? What other projects you go? I didn't forget.
What other projects do I have?
Yes.
I'm working on the Scarapus, the book.
That's why I said book and movie are coming out about the end of 2014.
I won't say at the end. It may be considerably sooner than that.
Well, I'm giving people a preview of what they're coming up. Is it going? Let me ask you: is it going to be a film book, or is it going to be just a novel?
To be announced.
Can I ask?
You mean you're not going to put in pictures from the movie? I mean, sheesh.
Go ahead. What's your question, dear?
I can't get a word in edgewise with Bennett. Hey, can I ask something?
Yes, you can.
Because the Facebook page for that looks awesome, but I can't find the description of it anywhere, and the title sounds rocking. So what exactly is that book about in the movie?
The movie is based on a real life experience with a scary therapist. It's a true story of therapist abuse that took place in Los Angeles just over 8 years ago.
Okay. So because
and Naomi, she did a blog post for Rachel about two, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, okay, if you go to Rachel. Yes, part one and part two, and I've been promoting them on Monday blogs. But yeah, you can just go in and look up Jean, or just look up Scarapist. And I love the title. I think people were like, "What the heck?" So I actually put in "scary therapist" in the as a little subtitle in the tweets that I did, and I think then it answers those questions so that you want to find out more about it. Yeah, my therapist friends were horrified, absolutely horrified.
Well, I've been listening to Jean talk about this movie for about, and you know, movies are not just doesn't happen just overnight. And I've been listening about her talk about this movie for about a year, and I'm so happy it's coming out.
Me too.
I told her, I said, I want a DVD of it. I really do. I want to watch it, and I'll go to the theater if I have to, but I'm ready for it. It's something I really, really want to see.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you. So when are you going to do a concert footage video?
Well, I did one called Naked a number of years ago, and I'll most likely be doing another one in my future. I don't have one scheduled, but I most likely will be doing one in my future.
Great.
Good. A friend of mine on Kindle Fight, I hooked a friend of mine up to your old CD, and so it's like 2-to-1 he'll order it on Kindle Fire or whatever. I don't know. I don't do that. I have a simple, basic Kindle. That's all I have. Mm-hmm. Any final words, ladies?
Mm-hmm. As usual, I have loved my time here. This has been a blast.
We have conversations. We talk about books. We talk about life. We talk about whatever. And we try to have fun.
This was fun. And we die.
Yeah. Let me give you a hint of what's coming up for Another Anything Goes. On June 7th, we have two guests set for Another Anything Goes. We're going to get another two, so it'll be a nice, it's four chairs, no waiting. Delaney Oaks will be there, and so it'll be nice to have her. And hopefully the other three are not firm yet. I want to make sure they're free. Well, we know, never mind. They're not firm as in selected and make sure they want to come and everything else. So
they're not fruit is what you're saying, basically. They're
yes,
not fruit,
I know.
Right?
They're not fruit either. So we're good. Yeah. Anybody else have anything they want to add before we close shop down and I could take it, you know?
Just thank you for having me, and I love our guests, and I feel like I'm doing the show with you, so thank you for having me as a guest and not a co-host.
Well, you know, I enjoy, because you are, I will tell you, I get email all the time, and it's like, why doesn't Rachel have her own show? You're holding her back. I'm like, what?
No. I love doing the show with you. It's fun. And I have enough on my plate. I couldn't possibly add that as well. I would probably be in the loony bin at that point.
Well, I only have four shows. I juggle. I have a writing career. I have nothing, you know. Plus, I will be in Loving Hearts Live Forever 2 in December. So, yes, I will. I have two pieces in Loving Hearts Live Forever 2. So, yeah, that'll be nice.
Yay!
Yes,
yay.
And then we'll all go to Barnes & Noble and watch me autograph.
There you
yay.
Go.
But
that would be lovely.
I would love it, too. I would love to have you guys there and go, oh, yeah, my fan club. Mm-hmm. All kidding aside, I will thank my guests this evening. Thank you very, very much, ladies, all three of you. Another Anything Goes, we'll be back on June the 7th. We will have four guests, and we'll have some great discussion. Thank you for coming. Fly right, stay healthy, and good night.
Good night.
Night.